Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on the Progressive Radio Network on Monday, June 3rd, 2013. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on Prescriptions for Health on the Progressive Radio Network on the first and third Monday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time and from 7 to 8 a.m. Pacific Time. And remember, our shows are available and archived 24/7 on PRN.fm and drsaputo.com.
Today we'll be talking about what's new in the news and health, and you'll hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after and 20 to the hour. And we've got a great show for you today that's going to include, should Angelina Jolie have had a bilateral mastectomy? My goodness, what a commotion this has caused.
And does estrogen influence the risk for sudden cardiac death?
Can the mineral oil products you put on your skin cause cancer?
And should doctor-assisted suicide be legalized?
And how about Kava Kava? Does it work for anxiety? And is it safe?
Well, there certainly has been a lot of controversy surrounding Angelina Jolie in the last few weeks and her decision to have her breasts removed due to the BRCA gene defect. Now, some of the controversy has been about the timing of Angelina's announcement in the New York Times. By Angelina Jolie coming out with the news of her BRCA gene mutation and decision to get a bilateral mastectomy without cancer and using the word choice at the same time as the upcoming human gene patent renewal has political and financial consequences.
This is a really big deal. You know, you look at somebody like Angelina Jolie, and she's a great actress, and she seems to be a humanitarian. She's involved
beautiful.
With politics. Yeah, she's got everything going for her. You can't really just start making comments about that this is, she's involved in some kind of conspiracy that has to do with a connection with the Supreme Court or Myriad Genetics Corporation. But you sure can look at it that way. And I think what Mike Adams has done in Natural News is really a contribution from the point of view that he's a pioneer in the way he does his research.
And he has different things to say than the news media.
Absolutely. It makes you think twice. And really, it boils down for me to, do we want people who are actors or actresses doing any kind of representation for fields that are not their expertise? Because we know they're good at making points because they're professionals at it. But do they have the expertise?
Well, I thought a lot of this was pretty interesting because it seems that Myriad Genetics Corporation is trying to get their patent on the BRCA gene reapproved by the U.S. Supreme Court, and it would mean big money for Myriad, and the stocks have been going up since this announcement.
Right.
And it appears that Angelina also has stock in this company.
You know, it makes you wonder.
It seems like what we usually call a conflict of interest, but this is a weird twist to it with somebody that's got the gene.
Well, look at the effect that it has on women. I mean, when Angelina, who is our, you know, our sex symbol in lots of respects, is having her breasts removed, this is a really huge thing to do. She now is really telling women that it's okay to do surgery for this particular for this defect, and it is okay, but it gives them more of an idea that they are sacrificing their breasts for their lives and for their families. It's much like prostate cancer in men.
Well, it kind of feels like it's a movement because women are admire her, a lot of women want to be like her, not
sure
that they would want to have breast cancer or anything. Well, she doesn't have breast cancer. That's
right. You got to be clear about that. She does not have breast cancer.
Yeah, she doesn't have the breast cancer. But just the thought of what she's doing, even though she was very careful in how she worded her situation when she was interviewed and so forth, saying that this was what felt right for her, not that it would be right for everybody else. But her mother died of ovarian cancer at 56.
Yeah.
Angelina has six children. She said the doctor told her she had this 87% chance of getting the breast cancer because she has the BRCA gene mutation. So she was scared and wanted to prevent herself from getting cancer. So this is the drastic step that she took without it seems we don't really know that maybe she didn't research alternatives because there are other things that people might choose to do.
Well, see, that's the problem, because she gets in a powerful position, has an op-ed in the New York Times and also a featured article on the cover of People magazine talking about this. And, of course, that gives women first fear that this is something that they need to check themselves. And the test that's done is $3,000 or $4,000 because Myriad Genetics Corporation has a patent on the genes, okay?
Which is so weird in the first place, to have a patent on a human gene. How did that ever happen?
Well, it's contrary to what we've done in healthcare ever since we've had patents, because we don't allow patents on things that are natural, like natural hormones or any natural treatments that are found in nature. But here now, a natural gene is being patented. And of course, about 20% of the human genome now is patented already. And what that means is that we don't have the ability, if we don't have permission from this company, to do anything with those genes or to come up with better approaches to screen or to treat or do anything related to those genes. There's something wrong with that picture.
Well, there sure is.
And that's what's coming up with the Supreme Court. The case has been heard. The court justices are looking at it now, and hopefully we'll have some kind of answer sometime this summer. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do, because there's a lot of money involved here.
Okay, with all this coming out, who should have this genetic test? I mean, this BRCA gene is inherited. Mm-hmm. So is that where we start with people that have close family relatives that have had breast cancer or ovarian cancer?
I think it depends on who you are. If you're an Ashkenazi Jew, the risk of getting breast cancer is much higher than in the general population, where the risk is maybe 5 or 10% of all breast cancers come from the BRCA gene defects. Maybe it's closer to 20% in that group. If someone has a family history of breast cancer or ovarian cancer, you could make a case for doing that. But keep in mind that maybe one person in 1,000 is going to get cancer because of a BRCA gene defect. And that number is fairly low. So what we've got here is a lot of hype in lots of ways that's making people think that they need, that maybe everybody should be getting this test. And of course, that means just an unbelievable amount of money for Myriad Genetics Corporation.
Well, I'll say. And then when I heard that the Affordable Care Act mandates that the taxpayers pay for the BRCA1 genetic testing, mm-hmm. you know, when we're talking $3,000 to $4,000 a shot, mm-hmm. I mean, that makes it easier for people to get the test, and that means a lot more money for Myriad.
Oh, for sure. I look at it this way. Only women with a strong family history really should be thinking about getting this BRCA gene test, and which is about 2% of U.S. women. It's not a big number. And keep in mind that the genes in themselves don't make the disease. There is a lot that has to do with epigenetics. You know, Bruce Lipton has done a lot of work. The Biology of Belief, I recommend that book to everybody. Have a look at it, because it really suggests that the influence of the environment on the genetic expression of those genes is tremendous. It may be as high as 90%. So you may have the gene in your body, but breast cancer 100 years ago wasn't a common disease. It was an unusual disease.
And you could outlive it.
Well, you could. But look at the fact that 100 years ago it wasn't here, and today it's all over the place compared to what it was when you're looking at maybe one woman in 7 or 8 eventually coming down with a breast cancer. That's, you're looking at 15% of people.
Well, we live in this sea of toxins
and
pollution.
That's what we're talking about. So when the environment or lifestyle affects what's happening here, we could do a lot to change our lifestyle. And of course, the horse is out of the barn in some ways, because our, like you said, we live in a sea of toxins. How do you get rid of that? But there are still things you can do to protect. We don't really have the long-term studies that show what's going to happen if you have this BRCA gene defect and you do things that are lifestyle-oriented to change what your risk would be to get it.
And one of the things that really irritated me is when they were talking about this, the mainstream media, and they were trying to tell women what to do, you know, and they said, well, if you have this BRCA gene, you should watch it and check on it if you're not going to get the mastectomy and get a mammogram.
Oh, that's
insanity. Frequent mammograms. Well, one mammogram might be enough to cause it to mutate.
Well, look at it this way. There was a study done a few years ago, published in a major journal, that looked at the effect of women under the age of 20 who had had one chest x-ray. Okay? That's all the radiation that's in a mammogram, and just on the breast, spread out over the entire chest. So it's much more diluted than what you'd get in the mammogram.
Because it's concentrated right on the
breast. Yes. So the risk went up 250% from that. That's what they reported. Oh. So now you're going to advise these people to go out and get concentrated x-rays on their breast?
To keep an eye on it?
I mean, that's a way to get it.
So let's talk about other ways that you can keep an eye on it.
Okay.
Like what about an MRI?
That's one way to do it, but it's a little dicey and
it's
expensive.
What about an ultrasound?
Ultrasound is another way to do it, but it's not that accurate. And in women who have dense breasts, you run the risk of getting confused. It's like with a mammogram.
So here we are again, narrowing it down to breast thermography.
Boy.
And the media just seems to refuse to acknowledge that there even is such a thing.
I know. You could easily follow women who have this defect or are at risk of having it with breast thermography starting at age 15 if you wanted to get a baseline. I suggest about age 25 to get a baseline. And if there's, and if you have the BRCA gene defect in your history or of your family, or there's breast cancer in your family, then why wouldn't you do that every 6 months? You know, it's an affordable test. It's $150 to $200.
There's no radiation.
No radiation. You're not touched. It's safe.
If you want to know more about it, you can just go on our website, drsaputo.com. But another thing that they should do is regulate their hormones.
Oh, for sure.
You don't want too much estrogen.
You want to measure them. And we get so many exposures that cause estrogen levels to get up. Exposure to plastics and pesticides are two huge things that do that. We're giving hormones to women. This hormone replacement therapy was a huge thing that increased the risk for developing breast cancer.
So let's talk about some other things here that can be helpful, like the tamoxifen therapy. What would you have to say about that?
Well, that would not be my first choice because it causes problems, too. It increases your risk for uterine cancer. It'll also increase your risk for getting blood clots. And
But it's good for breast cancer.
Well, it's good to prevent breast cancer, and it may be good to prevent metastases if you've had breast cancer. But it's an aggressive, dangerous treatment that I would not recommend for women to take.
Okay. Now, what about high lignin flaxseed oil? How does that work?
Well, that's very interesting, and that's a good way to lower estrogen levels in women who are premenopausal. And here's the thinking. When you're taking flaxseed oil or any other high lignin kind of product, what's going to happen is you're going to have a blockage of the receptor site by the weak estrogens that are in the flaxseed oil. And that will block the estradiol, which is a far more potent and powerful estrogen, from getting to that receptor site and having an effect. So in women who are premenopausal, where there's a lot of estradiol around, it will lower the effect, the lower the levels of effective estrogen.
So too much estrogen works like a carcinogen.
Yes. In postmenopausal women, though, it's different. There where you don't have much estradiol, it will raise your estrogen levels. So for younger women...
So that's perfect.
It is
high
perfect.
Lignin.
That's right.
Flaxseed oil, organic.
That's right.
Fresh fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about what indole-3-carbinol is.
Okay,
Most people don't know what that is. It's abbreviated I3C.
Yeah, well, that's a nice way. It's found in cabbage and it's in broccoli and kale.
Like the
cruciferous vegetables.
Okay.
And what it does is it tends to shift the ratio of the different kinds of estrogen so that you have more of the kind of estrogen that does not cause cancer as opposed to the type that does.
Great. Okay. And then what about vitamin D and vitamin C?
Huge factors, particularly vitamin D. We know that most women who get breast cancer have low levels of vitamin D. Same thing with prostate cancer in men and colon cancer and several others. So very important to make sure that you're either getting adequate sunlight or that you're taking a supplement, particularly in the wintertime. So we should get our vitamin D levels measured.
Okay, now, when we talk about lifestyle, I mean, that's pretty obvious, you know, all the things we always talk about almost on every show about
Absolutely.
The importance of lifestyle. But if we talk about diet, besides the cruciferous vegetables, there are a few other things that are kind of handy to know, like basil and pomegranate. And then juicing, you know, when we say juicing, we're talking not about having a glass of orange juice. We're talking
That's right.
about juicing fresh, raw green vegetables.
Yeah, well, that's really good for people who need a lot of vegetables. So people who have some kind of problem with their health, if you have the BRCA gene defect, that would be a smart thing to do because you can't eat 15 pounds of vegetables a day, but you can juice them, and that'll only make about eight-ounce glasses of juice, which you can drink. So you get good concentrated nutrition that's high in antioxidants and protects against cancer. If you're not going to take a lot of juice in through the day, it's better to eat the food or put it in some kind of mixer that chops it up and drink it.
Well, there's a lot of money in the cancer industry, and we need to get the celebrities out of it. And I just wanted to mention that in the November 2012 New England Journal of Medicine, they published an article saying that 1.3 million U.S. women are overdiagnosed and overtreated for breast cancer over a 30-year period of time, and that they cancers that never would have progressed, and yet they were treated and called survivors, and they inflated the statistics to make it look effective.
Now, there's a lot of politics because there's a lot of money that's involved with this whole condition, and we need to appreciate that. So we wish Angelina Jolie well and hope that she doesn't have any future problems with this disease. All right, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. It's time for Nurse Vicki's first 2020 tip on a sense of humor is healthy. And we'll be right back with, does estrogen influence the risk for sudden cardiac death? Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Dr. Len Saputo, and I'd like to introduce you to drsaputo.com, which is the web's most unique and evolutionary resource for good health and self-empowerment. drsaputo.com offers a library of more than 2,000 audio and video files featuring me and my wife, registered nurse Vicki Saputo, with cutting-edge integrative and holistic health information. Our media files also include an impressive array of leading health and wellness experts.
Taking the health assessments on drsaputo.com will provide you with customized integrative information about your unique health issues with specific ideas about how to safely and effectively manage them.
This website offers free membership as a service to inspire and educate, honoring you and your privacy while you're taking responsibility for your health.
DrSaputo.com offers entertaining and informative fast-track videos every weekday morning on what's new in healthcare, so you can cut through the confusion.
Visit DrSaputo.com and take your free health assessment now. That's DrSaputo.com.
Healthy. As I was lying in bed pondering the problems of the world, I rapidly realized that I don't really give a rat's hiney. It's the tortoise life for me. If walking's good for your health, the postman should be immortal. A whale swims all day, only eats fish and drinks water, and he's fat. And she's fat. A rabbit runs and hops and only lives 15 years. A tortoise doesn't run and does nothing, yet it lives for 450 years. And you tell me to exercise? I don't think so. I'm retired. Go around me. God grant me the senility to forget the people I never liked, the good fortune to run into the ones I do, and the eyesight to tell the difference. Well, now that I'm older, here's what I've discovered. I started out with nothing, and I still have most of it. My wild oats have turned into prunes and all bran. I finally got my head together, and now my body's falling apart. Funny, I don't remember being absent-minded. If all is not lost, where is it? Is it easier to get older than it is to get wiser? Now, some days you're the dog, and some days you're the hydrant. I wish the buck stopped here. I sure could use a few. kids in the back seat cause accidents. Accidents in the back seat cause kids.
Oh, that's great.
It's hard to make a comeback when you haven't been anywhere. The only time the world beats a path to your door is when you're in the bathroom.
Mm.
If God wanted me to touch my toes, he'd have put them on my knees. When I'm finally holding all the cards, why does everybody want to play chess?
Mm.
It's not hard to meet expenses. They are everywhere. The only difference between a rut and a grave is the depth.
That's you know, true.
These days, I spend a lot of time thinking about the hereafter. I go somewhere to get something and then wonder what I'm hereafter. Man, isn't that the truth? Funny, I don't remember being absent-minded. Did I tell these to you before?
I can't remember. Well, you've painted quite a picture there of maturity, Vicki.
Yeah, learning
the hard knocks of life, huh?
Yep, that's it. You know, every year in the United States, more than 350,000 people die of a sudden cardiac arrest, a fatal heart attack. And we all know that there are certain heart risks factors like diabetes and obesity and high blood pressure, high cholesterol. But what about hormone levels? Now, we're going to talk about a new finding that estrogen hormone levels are tied to the risk for sudden cardiac death. Now, usually when we talk about estrogen, we're thinking of women and female problems, but men have estrogen too.
Right. Well, the whole thing is interesting because it all ties together. You know, you look at estrogen and testosterone, then you have to look at thyroid hormone, adrenal hormones. Every hormone in the body works like a symphony. And we can make associations when we measure things. So we can see that in some settings, like where people are having a sudden cardiac death, where they just bang, they have some kind of rhythm disturbance or their heart stops pumping for some reason. And to make an association with a lot of things. And estrogen is one. And generally when estrogen levels are higher, the tendency for a sudden cardiac death is higher. And the same thing with low testosterone in men, but not in women. But that's interesting, too.
That increases the risk.
Low testosterone does, yes. And in women, higher testosterone. But then I think men and women are different. Last time I checked. And that could be one of the ways that we are different. And these are associations, not necessarily causes.
Well, can we clarify the difference in estrogen and its effects in arteriosclerosis and sudden cardiac death? Because it's different.
Well, what they found in this study is that people who had sudden cardiac deaths had higher estrogen levels in general than men and women who had just coronary artery problems. So keep in mind that not everybody who has a sudden cardiac death has arteriosclerosis. You have to look at the production of ATP, the energy currency of the body. Remember, gasoline runs a car and ATP runs your cells.
Right.
If you don't have enough ATP, it can't do its work. It makes you vulnerable to cardiac rhythm disturbances. And there's a good chance that we could be supporting people who are at risk for this, either because we've determined that they've had a fainting spell before, that maybe they survived. Or they have some other kind of problem that leads to putting them at risk for developing either the heart attack or the problem with the sudden cardiac death.
Well, it seems that these findings could help identify people that are at risk so that it would show the importance of doing these estrogen levels.
Well, that's true. I mean, that would be true. There are other ways that I think are far better than that we should be doing as a routine. I have three favorite tests.
I bet I know.
I bet you know all
three. Heart rate variability,
yes,
for one thing.
That's one. The other would be vascular stiffness, which tells you how stiff your arteries are and therefore how much arteriosclerosis you have and what your risk is for having coronary artery problems.
But you said that was different than the sudden cardiac death, though.
Like a sudden cardiac death is different from, it's not always, I mean, people who have heart attacks can have sudden death, too.
Yeah.
But this particular group that they studied, they looked back and they didn't have so much in the way of coronary artery problems as the group they compared them to, which did have that. So what I'm saying is that the three tests, the heart rate variability would be the first one. And that is the most predictive test in all of medicine that will tell you whether or not you're at risk from dying from a cardiac problem, whether it be a heart attack or be a sudden cardiac death. When you have low heart rate variability, and you can look this up on drsaputo.com, just put heart rate variability in the search box, and articles will come up that will tell you more about what that means and how to measure it and all that. It's an inexpensive test, however, that's very good to do. The vascular stiffness will tell you how much you have by just measuring a pulse wave in your finger. Will tell you what the size of the stiff factor is, a stiffness factor in your blood vessels. And the third thing I like to do is look at a live blood cell analysis, because there you get an idea of how thick is your blood. When you're looking at arteriosclerosis, you're looking at two things. One is narrowed blood vessels, and the other is how thick is your blood, because it's a clot in those narrowed places that causes the problem. So those are my three special tests.
Okay, so back to the estrogen. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to address some of the causes of these high estrogen levels, mm-hmm. because some of them are from unnatural things, and people might wonder, well, why do men get high estrogen levels? So maybe you could address that.
Okay. Well, when you're looking at our exposure to what are called xenoestrogens, which are saying environmentally formed estrogens that come from exposures to plastics, petroleum products, and pesticides, we can get levels of estrogens that are quite high that put us at risk for what's associated with high estrogen levels.
Yeah, we can get these also besides plastics from pesticides and herbicides.
Yes.
And even from red FDC food coloring. And we all hear things about PCBs and the BPAs and the PBBs and the parabens and the dioxins and the phthalates and even chlorine.
Sure. All environmental toxins that cause endocrine disruption, and meaning high levels of these xenoestrogens.
And they can lead to early puberty also, and breast cancer and low sperm counts. So they can promote cancer.
Right. Now, if you have this problem with low ATP production, which some people do, and sometimes that shows up as a congestive heart failure problem or an angina problem or a rhythm disturbance, you can support people with energy-producing nutritional supplements, things like L-carnitine. You know, we just reported a couple of weeks ago on the fact that people who have angina or who have a heart attack, as a rule, have very low levels of L-carnitine. And when those levels are low, you can't produce much ATP, because what L-carnitine does is it transports fatty acids into the heart muscle itself so that it can make ATP. So it's really important. And coenzyme Q10, especially for people on statins. And then using fish oil and taurine to try and control rhythm disturbances. There's a lot of things we can do to support that. So this subject goes on and on. And there's more to it than what we've had time to talk about. But we're at a place now where it's time for a network station break. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. And when we come back, we'll be talking about, can the mineral oil products you put on your skin cause cancer? So stay tuned for more Prescriptions for Health Radio. Welcome back to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki.
It's not new that skincare products can be hazardous to our health. If you've ever checked out Vicki's Corner on drsaputo.com, you know that we shouldn't put anything on our skin that we couldn't or wouldn't eat, because 60% of all the things that we put on our skin is absorbed into our circulatory system, into our bloodstream, our lymphatic system, ending up in our internal organs and our fat.
Right. And when you do that, autopsy studies have shown that 48% of these toxins or of livers are affected by these toxins. 46% are affecting the spleen and fat. So like Vicki said, if you wouldn't eat it, don't put it on your skin.
And the autopsy studies show that mineral oil, you know, permeates, and it can cause cancerous tumors. Mineral oil is a petroleum product. Would you put car oil on your body?
I mean, put it in my car.
It's carcinogenic. So look at your lotion ingredients and your makeup and your lipstick and your lip moisturizers and any moisturizers and sunscreens, and the list goes on. Just look at the ingredients. Get in the habit of doing that, because it's in a lot of things. And actually, mineral oil dries your skin more than, when you first put it on, it feels soft and it feels like it's lubricating your skin.
Yeah, the long-term effect is a drying of the skin. It actually plugs up your pores.
Exactly.
Not a healthy thing. And so there are some options we can use.
Yes, like coconut oil.
Exactly.
Well, there are other things, too. But we need to stay away from commercial brands and go for the food cosmetics as alternatives.
I think one thing people can do is they can go to the site and look at your list of safe skincare products and cosmetics and household cleaning agents, which is a very valuable piece of information. Because
you put in safe skincare products.
Up it will come.
Safe skin. What is it? Safe skincare list.
Uh-huh.
But I also have videos about the topic, too.
Right.
But, you know, mass marketing is amazing, how it can sell toxins. And people, you know, and they make us think that they're making us beautiful while they're making us sick and bioaccumulating in our bodies over the decades.
Well, for sure. I mean, all these kinds of things are important. And if you don't pay attention to them, because they're not going to be listed on the label telling you what the problem is, it's not required by law. So
no.
People don't want to shoot themselves in the foot if they're making these products.
And they're endocrine disruptors. They're estrogen-like petrochemicals, mm-hmm. like parabens.
Right.
And parabens actually can be found at 1 million times higher than natural estrogen that's found in breast tissue.
That's hard to believe. The breasts, we know, are absolutely polluted with stuff. You wonder why some of the cancer genes are triggered. And when you look at the stuff that's in the breast, all these compounds that are toxic to it, it shouldn't shock you that the risk of breast cancer has gone way up in the last 100 years.
I know one of the things that bothers me, too, is the chemicals that are in deodorants, and that's so close to the breast and the lymph nodes and everything else.
Another concern. There's literature about it that we should be paying attention to.
And there's no FDA regulation on skincare products, so we need to educate ourselves and to read the ingredients to make wise decisions regarding our health.
Mm-hmm.
And just because a doctor tells you it's okay to use something doesn't mean it is. Like, for example, look at the Eucerin and the Dermabase and the Dermavan and the Vanicream and the Lubriderm. All those things have mineral oil in them.
And those are prescribed by our dermatologists. I mean, to me, that's just shocking. I thought this was shocking for 20 years and wondered, why do they recommend this? And a lot of it is because of the power of the advertising of the pharmaceutical
industry that makes these products. They even give it to you in samples.
Right.
And I've seen it in the hospitals.
Right.
I've seen some of these bottles that have like a prescription label on it.
Exactly.
So, you know, petroleum's everywhere. It's not just in our cars, but it's also in the plastic and breast implants, on vegetables.
That's hard to believe, that they actually coat it with what they call safe forms of this stuff.
Like on the vegetables?
Yes.
Mean? Yes, and fertilizer, and it's in pesticides, the agrochemicals. It's even in synthetic patent medicines, and it's even in some vitamins, especially the time release.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think, Vicki? What should we do to get away from these things? What do you recommend as an expert in this field?
Well, we need to take responsibility and switch to food cosmetics like the coconut oil.
Uh-huh.
It really is superior to mineral oil in treating dry skin and hair because it penetrates and it nourishes the body.
Mm-hmm.
And as an aside, coconut oil is antifungal,
mm-hmm.
and it can even kill lice if it's mixed with anise in a spray, and it works better than the insecticide that's so toxic with the permethrin.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, for a lot of these alternatives, you can go on our website.
All right. Now, who do you think is going to do the studies that looks at these toxic ingredients and what their effects are on the skin?
Well, it certainly isn't going to be the companies.
No, and it's not going to be the National Institutes of Health, which is the organization that should be sponsoring these studies, because that's what we pay for. Our tax dollars go to the National Institutes of Health to fund studies that are the important ones to do. And yet it doesn't happen.
Well, there are some really nice products that contain coconut oil that I like
mm-hmm.
to use.
Mm-hmm.
But a person could even just use the coconut oil themselves.
Well, you can buy
just rub that
good,
on
high-grade coconut oil. I mean, make sure it's high-grade, because if it's not, it contains aflatoxin. So your cheaper brands you have to worry about.
But which is kind of interesting, seeing that coconut oil is antifungal and mm-hmm. that the poor quality coconut oil could have a fungus in it. How could that be?
Well, just because it's antifungal doesn't mean it'll kill something that causes aflatoxin. It will suppress the growth of a lot of things that have a fungus in them. Mm-hmm. But it's not like taking a powerful antibiotic, okay, mm-hmm. that's going to kill the fungus that's making something that's really toxic. So we've got a topic here that's one that we ourselves have to take responsibility for, because we're not going to find that we're going to get much help from our dermatologists. We're certainly not going to get it from the people that produce it.
And the FDA has no
jurisdiction.
Jurisdiction. Okay.
So here we are. Okay, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Saputo here with Nurse Vicki, and we'll be back with Nurse Vicki's final 2020 tip on Maxine's thoughts for the day. That ought to be interesting. The genius Maxine is at work again. And when we come back, we'll be talking about, should doctor-assisted suicide be legalized? And finally, does CAVA work for anxiety, and is it safe?
Maxine's thoughts for the day. I believe that everything happens for a reason. Usually the reason is that somebody screwed up. Most stress is caused by three things: money, family, and family with no money. Only on a cruise ship will you pay hundreds of dollars a day to sleep in a closet. Thanks to the internet, you can get hopelessly in debt without ever leaving your house. If you need a shoulder to cry on, pull off to the side of the road. Now, my idea of a Super Bowl is a toilet that cleans itself.
Not many men are going to go along with that one.
There should be support groups for women who can't put their dishes in the dishwasher dirty.
That's probably true.
That's it.
All right. Maxine, thanks for your wisdom.
We've got to lighten things up a bit here.
Absolutely.
Especially with this next topic. You know, putting an animal down that's in pain or terminal is generally accepted, but when it comes to a human, it's a different story. And for various reasons, some people believe in euthanasia and others don't.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon and Washington have legalized doctor-assisted suicide, and now Vermont is becoming the third U.S. state allowing doctors to prescribe lethal drugs on terminally ill patients. But, you know, this has really been going on in hospitals for a long, long time.
As long as I've been a doctor, Vicki.
But new laws are now making what we've been doing all along legal. So,
and they're taking it a step further, too, because you can talk about it, you can do things that are a little bit more humane and appropriate. But when we've had patients who are in the hospital dying, particularly those on cancer and there's no hope.
Or bone pain,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, they're miserable. We give them morphine, right? And if you keep increasing the amount of morphine, which you have to control their pain, they wind up stopping breathing, and that, of course, is lethal, and that's really a form of euthanasia.
So, we're going to be talking about the rules and the ethics and debate on this issue during this show. You know, you were talking about the morphine for the terminal patients, and I had a friend years ago that had cancer of the esophagus, and he was, like, losing a lot of weight. And
probably couldn't eat, yeah.
No, he couldn't eat. And so finally the decision was made for him to go home, and his girlfriend was going to take care of him, and I guess he was able to walk. He went in the other room and got his gun and shot himself.
Yeah, see, we shouldn't have to do things like that. And yet, you know, I think this is a decision that should be made by people who are in the driver's seat. It's their life, and they're working through it. You know, there are a lot of...
But there's ethics and political things here and morals, religious aspects.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it playing God?
Well,
is suicide murder? I mean, is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking about suffering, but some people believe that if you shoot yourself and that's murder, then that's a sin.
Uh-huh.
And when you die, you're going to go to hell.
Well,
and that would be... painful. So you've got pain on earth or pain when
no
you go.
No matter where you go, you get it.
So maybe it's better to sweat it out. I don't know. Something to think about.
Well, you know, I hope we're never in that position. And I don't know what my choice will be, although I know that I faced death about almost 2 years ago now. And I was fine with it. And I was in some pain, but I could handle it. And as it turned out, I had a nice talk with God and said, you know, if you're going to take me now, it's okay. But I wasn't going to do it to myself. I felt like I had a chance to recover, and then things worked out.
You know, too, I was just thinking about years ago, and I may have shared this story before, but I was working in ICU, and there was a patient there that was in critical condition. And the doctor called and he said, I just got through talking with all the family and everybody's decided that it's okay to pull the plug. And so I hung up and I looked at the other nurses and I said, well, I don't want to do it. And they're like, we don't want to do it.
Right.
So it's like, well, so what are we going to do? So we called the doctor back. We told the doctor we didn't want to do it. So then he came in and he did it.
Well, that's what should have happened. That's right.
But what is that? I mean, pulling a plug is different than administering something to kill them, or is it?
Well, I mean, the end effect is the same. If somebody's basically already pretty much dead and they're in a coma and they're flatlined, it's time to pull the plug because you're just wasting.
Is their brain dead?
Yeah, brain dead. And yet you hear stories about people, you know, who after years will come back to life and function.
Yeah, so.
So you have a tough challenge here of trying to know what to do.
Well, here's
a nurse shouldn't be in a position of having to follow orders. It's not like the army or where you're having to follow orders from somebody.
Well, here's another question. Is it okay to have a law like this and then just make it your own personal decision with God? Because it's not something you'd have to do. However, one of the fears that I have or concerns that I have is that if these laws keep passing in other states and so forth, maybe the government would get involved because it costs a lot of money for end-of-life care.
Absolutely.
We've talked about that before. And so it would be cheaper to kill these people, basically, to let them go.
Well, as we're moving.
So would eventually there be a decision that the government would make the decision and just say, okay, this person's old, they're going to die, they only have a lifespan of another couple months, so we're going to just get rid of them and give them a shot like you do on death row?
Well, you'd have to worry about that. I mean, that would be a concern. And who knows what will happen? You know, everybody thinks that the government's on your side, and now we're moving into this area of electronic records, which I can tell you I am really opposed to, even though there's some obvious advantages to it from the point of view of getting records and being able to communicate with other doctors and with families, etc. But when the government knows everything you're doing and they're paying the bills,
could be misused.
They'll punish you for it. And now, if all of a sudden we have consensus in general at the government level that says these are the conditions where we will support sustaining life, and these are the conditions where we won't. And if we're in a situation where cost is a big issue like it is today, we're spending 50% of our healthcare dollars during the last year of life, we're looking at something that becomes a major concern from the point of view of where do you spend the money the most sensibly? And is legalized assisted suicide the answer to save some of those costs in some situations?
One of the other things that I notice is that they've got this electrically charged word choice, you know, coming up again. So pro-choice, pro-life, and now it's end-of-life choice.
Well, that's right. That's right.
And you know, if you just follow nature, it's not our choice. We just go when we go, when the time is right. Now, there are a couple states, Montana and Connecticut, that have banned this practice ahead of time. They don't.
Well, there's
want
a lot of
there.
Controversy about it, and a lot of different opinions, and understandably so. Well, look at the history in Oregon and Washington that have had these laws since 1998, and what have they had? About 1,050 requests for assisted suicide, and 673 actual suicides. So we're not looking at massive numbers here over 10 years, or more than that. That's 15 years. You're looking at not very many people who are doing that.
Another thing that I wanted to bring up here that I think is interesting about animals, because animal control with horses, for example, there was just a write-up in the paper a month or so ago, and it reminded me of a horse that I had several years ago that was getting old, and that's what happened with these other horses, getting old.
And they don't eat much.
And even though, no, they're eating, but they can't put on weight.
Right.
So it's like they're going to die.
Yeah, but they're at the end of life. That's right.
Yeah, but so why not? Why isn't it okay for them to just stay out to pasture and be in nature and just not die naturally?
Well, see, this is what happens.
So somebody reports the horse and says, these people have a horse that's thin. And the animal control comes out and says, you have to put it down.
Yeah,
and there's no choice. They absolutely make you put it down and they make you pay for it and everything else. And I know my horse wasn't miserable.
No, right.
He just was getting old.
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, that's what happens to people. And here we are looking at what do you do when somebody's at the end of life? Who is the boss? I would say the patient should be the boss because it's their relationship with the universe.
But I'm just afraid, because these rules are the way they are with animals, that they could happen with people too, and we might not want that.
Well, you could imagine that happening. I think that's absolutely right. So when we're making the decision about assisted suicide, I think it should be the patient's final decision, but the people putting input should be the patient, their family, their physician, a spiritual or religious counselor of some kind, and somebody who's looking at economics, a bean counter, because there are financial issues here that are very important in some situations.
Well, they've made up some rules for this. You know, it's not to be used for the heirs, or they don't want the person to do it because they have a fear of being a burden on their family.
Right.
The patient administers it themselves. There have to be witnesses. There has to be the primary doctor and the consulting doctor that approve of it.
Right.
They have to show that the patient's capable of the decision, so that the patient's supposed to request this twice within a two-week period of time, and then the patient gives the drug to themselves. Well, not all people that are in that state could give it to themselves.
Well, I think almost everybody could, because all it would be is a matter of pushing a syringe of stuff that's toxic.
Well, it depends on how weak or shaky you are.
Well, that's true. I mean, there would be exceptions to that.
I mean, my mother's 97, and she's like ready to... wants to go.
She's not listening to this program.
But, right. No, but I mean, if she wanted to go and it was legal to do it and all that, I don't think she could push the syringe.
Oh, I think she could.
She's shaky.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there are ways to work that through. But I understand what you're saying.
Anyway, they also want witnesses, but not the heirs that have to sign the paper. So they have a lot of rules and things about it that they're incorporating.
Well,
into
we
it.
Don't have a system that's perfect. Okay, we do have a problem, and suffering is a big issue, and it's a very personal thing about what you decide to do. I don't think it should be imposed. You know, your fear about what the government could do if this became a policy, and healthcare dealt with that in this way. That's a big deal.
Especially now with the Affordable Care Act and the, you know, and the way insurance is. They might say, well, you're too old. You're costing too much money.
Well, that's...
But who's to say what's too old? I mean, everybody ages differently. I have a friend that's in her early 70s, and she went to the doctor with some problem. And the doctor just said, oh, normally I wouldn't prescribe this, but because of your age, I'll let you just have it. It doesn't matter. In other words, you're over the hill.
Well, how much you spend, you know, is a big deal. I mean, look what happened to Superman. I've forgotten what his name was, but he had an unbelievable situation. He had fallen, had a fracture of his neck.
He broke his neck from horseback riding.
Right, and he couldn't do much of anything, but there were a lot of tools or a lot of equipment that he used. He spent millions of dollars. That's not the kind of thing that you would expect to provide to everybody.
I think he even directed a movie that way.
He could have.
He probably had money, too.
Well, of course, and that's what a lot of this comes down to. If you have the money, that's fine. If you don't have the money, then whose responsibility is it? How far do you go? And this is where doctors got into trouble years ago, you know, when we got into HMO medicine. We basically said, look, we'll treat people because that's what we do. We're not interested in finances. You, the rest of you worry about how you're going to pay for it. We're doctors. We're just going to give you what we think you need and don't care about the cost so much. And here we are today with HMOs that hold the purse strings for medicine, and we've got a real problem on our hands.
Well, it's certainly something to think about and pray about.
Absolutely. And hope it doesn't happen to you or someone close to you, because it's an agonizing decision to have to make.
But it's also tough for family, you know, to make a decision to let a loved one go.
Well, that's right.
Even if you're not killing them, but I mean, like to take them off life support I think that's a big responsibility for family members, and not all the family members agree when there's a decision like that
to
be made.
Well, that's why the final decision, in my opinion, is the patient's. I would go with that.
Well, that's why people need to write this up ahead of time. What's that called, a living will?
I don't know. No, it's an advanced directory. There are all kinds of things that have to do with what you do with certain
situations. So if you have strong opinions about this, get it legalized and write it up. Okay, our next topic, anxiety. You know, this keeps coming up every week. It's a very popular topic.
We've got a country that's full of anxious people because of all the stresses we have.
And here it comes again this week. So this time, instead of treating it with a potentially toxic antidepressant pharmaceutical drug with a placebo effect, we've learned of a new Australian study touting the medicinal benefits of an alternative the root of the herb kava. Uh-huh. Some people call it kava kava.
Right.
So, of course, we always recommend lifestyle before supplements or medications. But if you need something more than exercise,
something temporary,
and other stress reduction techniques, you might want to investigate kava.
Yeah, well, I think you got to keep in mind that it doesn't matter how you're addressing managing the symptoms of anxiety, you're not usually dealing with the underlying cause. That needs to be dealt with. But there's a humanitarian side where there's compassion, saying somebody's suffering. They can't sleep. They've got post-traumatic stress symptoms. They're miserable with their lives. You want to do something to help them to feel better. And the question then is, what's the best way to do that? Do you want to use the drugs?
Well, if you get to a point where you need to use something.
Well,
the kava has less risk of dependency and less potential for side effects than the anti-anxiety.
That's
meds
true.
We talked about last time.
That's
you know,
true.
The SSRI antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
And it works in the brain. And it also is a topical anesthetic.
It's a very mild one. It's not one that would be used in medicine as an anesthetic. But when you take the liquid and you grind up the root, which is the active part of what you want in this preparation, and you mix it with water and you drink it, there's a numbing effect. Not complete, but enough. So your
Might
suggestion
be a good
is
thing
what?
For the dentist.
Yeah. I mean, what
if
better place
anxious,
to do it?
Yeah, if you're anxious about going to the dentist.
Which you, most people are.
Plus, you don't want it to hurt.
Yeah, well, it does usually. That's right.
Well, another study, this study also, I guess it was this study, showed that kava increases a woman's sex drive as well.
It may, yeah.
Might have to do with her depression.
Well, it might, but that's, I mean, it's interesting to know.
So why was there a problem with kava kava a few years ago?
Well, what happened is the FDA basically kind of shut it down and saying that there's a problem with liver disease here and there were a lot of people getting it. And what they found is that when you use something more than the root, you use the stems and the leaves, it contaminates the root itself, it leads to problems with the liver that can be life-threatening. So that's what came up there.
So what a person would have to do, you want to get just the root. It's exported from the South Pacific, but you need to be able to find a good company. So I guess the way you would do that is just call the company and ask them if they...
How they make it.
How they make it.
And do they exclude the stems and the leaves?
Yeah.
That's right, because it can be toxic.
You just want the roots. You want to get to the root of it.
Yeah, well, in this particular study, what they did is they looked at about 75 patients who had generalized anxiety disorder, followed them over 8 weeks, and they found that there was a 26% remission rate in the anxiety using kava and only 6% in the placebo group. So we've got something here that has a rather powerful effect. You don't find that with a lot of drugs, particularly antidepressants. And they found that it was well tolerated. There were no changes in liver tests. There was no problem with withdrawal or with addiction. And like you said, it increases libido. So it was a great thing to use. And this was...
And I was just going to say, if you're done.
I'm done.
Just like with other antidepressants, it's not good to take it with alcohol.
No, for sure. And it's not good to take for a long time. I think the safety is probably a few months. And hopefully you're going to do something to work on the underlying cause for why people have this. Because, you know, no drugs, herbs, or supplements deal with the underlying cause for the anxiety itself. And they merely block the symptoms. The other thing that's important to point out is that we're always busy in the pharmaceutical world trying to extract the active ingredient from the plant. And to me, yeah, there's something to it. But the most important thing here is that the whole plant extract is different. It's the way Mother Nature made it.
Yeah, but in this one, we don't want the whole plant. We only want the root.
Well, that's right. That's right. But the whole root is what I'm talking about. So it should be ground up and taken as a whole root extract. And it's safer, and it also has a more balanced effect that leads to people having less in the way of side effects and a more positive effect of the kava itself. And when we're talking about supplements in general that are derived from plants, the active ingredient is interesting to know about, but it's not the cat's meow or the final issue here. Well, we're at the end of the show, and we want to remind you that we'll be back to talk about what's new in the news and health the first and third Mondays of every month on PRN.FM and DrSaputo.com from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time and 7 to 8 a.m. Pacific Time.
Prescriptions for Health will also be available 24/7 on PRN.FM.
If you enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we discussed, go to Dr. Saputo Radio on drsaputo.com and check out our Fast Track videos. And remember, a healthy lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.